Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
That morning chat with your next door neighbour, a quick natter with the man in the newsagent or a gossip with a colleague at the water cooler. These might seem like meaningless interactions, but they are in actual effect more important than we think. To tell us more, I'm joined in studio by Dr. Harry Barry, a GP and mental health specialist. And from our Limerick studio, I'm joined by Dr. Anne-Marie Craven from the Department of Psychology at the University of Limerick. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Harry, what harm does loneliness do to us?
I think loneliness is increasingly being seen as one of the major illnesses, really. Do you know what I mean? Which is extraordinary. Like, if you are suffering from significant loneliness, your risk of premature death, for example, increases by 50%.
Really?
That much.
50%?
50%. And that is because there's a greater instance of illnesses like strokes, heart attacks. It's a greater incidence of dementia, there's more depression, there's more anxiety. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there, there's about 400,000 people, I think, live alone. Now, not all of those are lonely, most of them are quite happy, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? But their loneliness is an entity that we need to kind of take a lot more seriously. And in fact, in some countries, they've actually appointed ministers for loneliness to try to actually come up with policies to try to reach
the Minister for Loneliness. I would imagine that that's not a job description that no politician runs very fast in the direction of. Anne-Marie, does that surprise you? 50% increased early mortality as a result of loneliness.
It doesn't actually, because I work quite closely in loneliness research, and it is a public health issue, and it's increasingly being recognised as an issue for older adults who are more at risk of those health conditions Harry mentions, but also for younger adults who are going through a lot of life changes, moving place, moving job, travelling. So there's a lot of disruption to their social networks that puts them at risk for loneliness at a time when that trajectory of mental health is developing and is important. So experiencing loneliness at any life stage isn't pleasant, and most of us will at some point. But for younger adults and for older adults, it can be quite impactful for mental and physical health.
So let's talk about the antidote then. Friendships, Harry. Most of us will, as we get older, probably only have two or three really true deep friendships. You're saying, though, we need a lot.
I think what we're beginning to identify more and more is that we need a thing called micro-friendships. And micro-friendships is all those small interactions that you have every day. Do you know the interactions
passing
at work
acquaintances,
days, chatting to people, people down maybe in the local supermarket, you're standing at the sideline watching your child and you're chatting to the person beside them, you're waiting with a mother down at the school gate, you're chatting to them.
No, I get the picture, but so, what good does it do us?
Well, actually, this is called your social biome. It's a very interesting term. It's like the structure, the social structure around us. And that, believe it or not, is very nourishing. Do you know what I mean? So loneliness is actually where we lack that social biome. Apart from not having close friendships, we actually lack that social. So it's been shown to actually be very, very supportive of us and very important for us. Those face-to-face interactions are really, really important for our mental health and actually very important for our physical health.
How so, do you think, Anne-Marie? You know, hi, how are you? Shocking weather we're having. Yeah, it's awful, isn't it? What good does that do you?
Yeah, so you might think it doesn't do much good at all, but these weak ties or micro-friendships and these short interactions with them are quite important because cumulatively they add up to quite a lot of our day and quite a lot of our social contact. So one reason these micro-friendships might be important is because, well, first, they might become more meaningful ties. So someone who starts out as someone you just say hello to on your walk in the morning, maybe you end up taking a walk with them another day and you could form a closer friendship out of that. And another reason these micro-friendships are important is they expand your social circle and introduce you to more people that you might click better with than that initial person. And you're also meeting more of the kinds of people that introduce you to new ideas and information. So your next job, for example, might come from a referral from one of these micro-friendships in your life. So if you add up the sum total of all these daily interactions, most of which are usually positive, and the potential to meet more people, to form closer relationships, and to get access to ideas and information that are important for you, all of this is quite impactful on your life in the long term.
Harry, explain this to me from your point of view, though. How does having lots and lots of little nodding acquaintances do me any good, or anything that having one or two really enduring relationships with the kind of people who are going to say, Philip, you need to take better care of yourself on X, Y or Z front?
Yeah, I think actually, if you look at it, I believe we're holistic. Do you know what I mean? I think we've got to do away with this idea of mental health versus physical health, that we are total human beings. So, for example, if I lack those social contacts, believe it or not, my stress hormones, my cortisol levels climb.
Do they really?
Absolutely. And if they start climbing, we're more likely to get inflammation, we're more likely to get all the things like heart disease and all that.
Okay, but hang on a second.
Because to a certain extent, when I'm having those face-to-face conversations, I'm actually relieving a lot of stress out of my life. I'm actually ventilating. I'm actually getting nourishment. I think we actually totally underestimate, and this is something I've spent my last 10 years really talking about, we desperately need face-to-face interactions, even if they're only tiny little, minor little things. I will actually make a point of stopping and spending that 30 seconds talking to somebody who's mm-hmm. serving me, do you know what I mean? Who's doing something for me. Because, you know, I understand that those tiny interactions are actually the core of our lives. And it's been my whole way of existence during my whole life, that if you don't understand the importance of those little things, you've kind of missed the boat. You
know? Even if so many of those day-to-day little interactions with people can actually be quite stress-inducing themselves, because they ask you how you are. Social convention demands that you say, oh, I'm grand, I'm absolutely fine. But inside, you know you're lying. You're not telling them how good you are, how bad you are. And that raises your cortisol levels.
But maybe there's a certain lack of honesty. Now, obviously, we're not going to open up to how we feel to every person we meet. But there will be certain times where you may be really struggling. You may be really in trouble. And I remember having a wonderful interaction like that in Eason's bookshop. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Where a lady was looking at the books. And she was very distressed, and I started talking to her. And it turned out that her partner of X number of years had left her. She was absolutely devastated. She was destroyed. She was lonely. She was crying. I spent 30 minutes with that lady. Do you know what I mean? Just being with her. And she came over afterwards to say, thank you. Do you know what I mean? Now, that interaction wouldn't have happened, only there was a small little interaction. So, you know, it mightn't be, a lot of the time these interactions are minor, they're not relevant, but they're good for us. Because otherwise we get very selfish and we look very introverted, you know. We need to go out and be there for other people.
And the control in this kind of experiment was lockdown in some respects, wasn't it, Anne-Marie, when we all lost the habit of interacting on a daily basis with people. And we saw that in so many cases, there were a large number of people who didn't reintegrate themselves into society, who remained isolated.
Yeah, I think we learned a lot from that experience because, of course, we were discouraged from engaging with people that we weren't very close to, or people outside the household. And I think for some people that can become a habit. And habits are really hard to break, but the habit of greeting people, of thanking them, of extending a brief conversation you end up having with someone is a really important habit. Because even if your closest friends and family are amazing supports to you, you need to be connected to your community. So you need that for practical reasons, like health, like putting the bins out, like leaving a key with the neighbour. And you also need it because during, as people age, maybe the radius of which they travel shrinks that little bit. So having relationships nearby is so important. So while a lot of us might have lost that habit, both because of COVID and also because I think we've replaced greeting people with maybe messaging our best friend as we are walking, right? As we have lost that habit, it's important to try and take that up. And the research that has actually asked people to take this up, this habit of greeting, of thanking, of extending a social interaction, finds that it does boost people's life satisfaction. So while you might feel a bit self-conscious about doing it, about saluting someone for the first time that you don't know, or about making that little bit of conversation the next time you end up, you know, on the Lewis with somebody who's not looking at their phone, if you do that, you will reap a small benefit. And over time, that can become something larger.
Harry, Anne-Marie was the first to introduce the phones into this conversation.
Apologies.
Well, no. I think it's actually the most meaningful part of this, potentially. Are online friendships a satisfactory substitution for relationships, or are they inimical to what it is that you're talking about here?
You know, I have been renowned for talking about this. Like, you cannot replace a face-to-face conversation. It doesn't matter how many friends you have online.
No, true, but I can stay in touch with friends on the other side of the world that I might otherwise lose contact with.
Of course I can. Do you know what I mean? But let's be blunt about it. If that friend was sitting in front of you and you sat down with them and you had to chat with them over a cup of tea or whatever, do you know what I mean, for an hour, that would be a lot more nourishing.
Yeah, but I can't. They're in Australia.
You can. Oh, no, I'm not saying... I think the big mistake we're all making is there are, of course, there are advantages to social media. So to say there are no advantages would be wrong. But we have to be honest and say, how often do we, as Anne-Marie rightly say, fire off a text, fire off a WhatsApp, fire off an email, rather than picking up the phone? When was the last time you wrote a letter? When was the last time you communicated person? When was the last time you stopped? Like 5 minutes with a human being is worth an hour, as far as I'm concerned, roaming around on all your social network, because it's more nourishing for you. All the evidence shows that you don't get the same nourishment out of those type of very, shall we say, cold interactions in many cases online. And let's be blunt about it, you can hide how you feel online, but if somebody's looking at you and say, you know, you seem very sad. Well, to be honest, I'm after losing somebody. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Now I'm having a conversation about something that's really meaningful.
I hear you murmuring your agreement, Anne-Marie.
Yeah, look, we've done research on how people experience loneliness, and something young people say is that while social media has advantages, it cannot replace in-person connection. So it's become culturally very dominant, and it's not going to go away, and it has some positives, but it can't replace in-person connection. And people even who use social media a lot are aware of this. It's just hard. It's hard when it's so prominent to fight back against that and to put the phone down and to nod or smile if everybody else is staring at their phone on the Lewis as well. So I think if we remember that, if we recognise ourselves that those in-person interactions are more rewarding and say, right, can I make a habit of this? Can I make, when I go back to work after my holiday, it's a great time to start a new habit. Can I make a habit of greeting people? Can I decide I mightn't look at the phone at this time? Maybe if a meeting could be in person with somebody, maybe I'll try and do that. It can be that more rewarding.
Let's lay off the phones for a second and look at other aspects of the built environment around us. Our reporter Brian O'Connell did a really interesting piece a week or two ago about the frequency with which doorbells and letterboxes are being removed from newly built houses.
Yes.
Are we building and constructing a world in which neighbourliness, if that is a word, is being discouraged?
I would totally agree. I think you do your programme in the country every Saturday, which is very good. And I actually think in rural areas, there's a far greater neighbourliness, there's a far greater interaction. But we're now living, whether we like it or not, in large urban sprawls, many of us are living in situations where we barely know our neighbours. We barely know those people in the apartments above or below us. So we're very, very isolated in many, many ways. So one of the questions that I would ask out there at the moment, there is an absolute hysteria about building houses, rightly so, because so many of our people desperately need houses to live in. But are we building houses at the expense of building communities?
And shared spaces.
And shared spaces. Because we have so many, I'm very worried about these hollowed out cities and towns that I'm seeing all over this country. Everywhere I go, I see a hollowed out town. And I'm very worried about that. It's like as if we have taken the heart out of so many towns. There are so many small towns and villages in the country that have been decimated by very poor planning, very poor organisation. Yeah. So, you know, we are removing you know, the very thing that actually increases microfriendships in neighbourliness and community and things like that. And that's something maybe that has to be explored at a much bigger level than here.
Another aspect to the Donut Town phenomenon. Thank you very much, Harry Barry and Anne-Marie Craig.